Mr. Greenleaf opened the door for them. "Good morning," he said. He pressed Marge's arm in a fatherly way. "Tom?" Tom came in behind Marge. The detective was standing by the window, a short, chunky man of about 35. His face looked friendly and alert. "Moderately bright, but only moderately," was Tom's first impression. "This is Alvin McCarron," Mr. Greenleaf said. "Miss Sherwood and Mr. Ripley." They all said, "How do you do?" Tom noticed a brand new briefcase on the bed with some papers and photographs lying around it. McCarron was looking him over. "I understand you're a friend of Richard's," he asked.
"We both are,"
Tom said. Tom sat down in an armless chair, upholstered in red. McCarron had installed himself on the bed and was looking through his sheaf of papers. There were a few photostated papers Tom saw that looked like pictures of Dickie's checks. There were also several loose photographs of Dickie. "Do you have the rings?" McCarron asked, looking from Tom to Marge. "Yes," Marge said solemnly, getting up. She took the rings from her handbag and gave them to McCarron. McCarron held them out in his palm to Mr. Greenleaf. "These are his rings?" he asked, and Mr. Greenleaf nodded after only a glance at them, while Marge's face took on a slightly affronted expression, as if she were about to say, "I know his rings just as well as Mr. Greenleaf, and probably better." McCarron turned to Tom. "When did he give them to you?" he asked. "In Rome, as nearly as I can remember, around February 3rd, just a few days after the murder of Freddie Miles," Tom answered. The detective was studying him with his inquisitive, mild brown eyes. One couldn't tell a thing from that face, Tom thought. It was trained. "What did he say when he gave them to you?"
"He said that if anything happened to him, he wanted me to have them. I asked him what he thought was going to happen to him. He said he didn't know, but something might."
Tom paused deliberately.
"He didn't seem more depressed at that moment than other times. I talked to him so it didn't cross my mind that he was going to kill himself. I knew he intended to go away, that was all."
"Go where?" asked the detective.
"To Palermo," he said.
Tom looked at Marge.
"He must have given them to me the day you spoke to him in Rome. The day or the day before. Do you remember the date?"
"February 2nd, Marge said in a subdued voice. McCarron was making notes. "What else?" he asked Tom. "What time of day was it? Had he been drinking?"
"No. He drinks very little. I think it was early afternoon. He said it would be just as well if I didn't mention the rings to anybody, and of course I agreed. I put the rings away and completely forgot about them, as I told Miss Sherwood. I suppose because I'd so impressed on myself that he didn't want me to say anything about them."
Tom spoke straightforwardly, stammering a little inadvertently, just as anybody might stammer under the circumstances, Tom thought.
"What did you do with the rings?"
"I put them in an old box that I have, just a little box I keep buttons in."
McCarron regarded him for a moment in silence, and Tom took the moment to brace himself. Out of that placid yet alert Irish face could come anything. A challenging question, a flat statement that he was lying. Tom clung harder in his mind to his own facts, determined to defend them unto death. In the silence, Tom could almost hear Marge's breathing, and a cough from Mr. Greenleaf made him start. Mr. Greenleaf looked remarkably calm, almost bored. Tom wondered if he had fixed up some scheme with McCarron against him based on the ring story.
"Is he the kind of man to lend you the rings for luck for a short time? Had he ever done anything else like that?"
McCarron asked.
"No,"
Marge said before Tom could answer. Tom began to breathe more easily. He could see that McCarron didn't know yet what he should make out of it.